You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Ultimate Nerd Podcast. I'm your host today, Ryan Trainer, and today I'm with a friend of a podcaster podcast. Does that make sense?
But a podcast friend associate.
Yeah. Well, we're friends on and off the mic, but yeah. Hey, Brad, what's up?
It's another day in the studio, yeah. Which is always a good day.
It's always a good day. And Brad's part of the 8-Bit Waffles and the breakfast table. So yeah, what's going on with you? What's new?
Well, this weekend was the launch of Captain Marvel, which controversial movie because it's very mixed reviews right now, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
So that's the big thing right now.
But yeah.
Beyond that, not much new. Yeah. You know.
That's cool. Like, I think this is so obviously when we are on this podcast, we're talking about nerd shit and, you know, whatever that may be. It could be video games, anime, you know, movies and all this. And what's interesting that Captain Marvel came out this weekend for this, and our topic today is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yes.
You know, if you don't know, Brie Larson, who is Captain Marvel, was a part, obviously, of Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So it's kind of like fit in right, you know? So
yeah, she plays Scott's ex-girlfriend in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And she has a very pivotal, you know, kind of storyline in the comics, manga, graphic novel, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And it's not so much in the actual movie where Brie Larson plays her, but it is definitely...
She has like a chapter almost in the movie, you know what I mean? And it's like, it seems like from my understanding in the graphic novel, she's more into, you know, the actual... you know, story and
she's
stuff.
She's very entwined in the story. She's actually in three of the graphic novels, story-wise, versus in the movie, which only focuses on part of one of the graphic novels that she's actually in.
Yeah. So it's funny thinking about it because us running into a couple other podcasters here when we were talking about what we're talking about now, you know, we were like, yeah, we're talking about Scott Pilgrim. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, the movie obviously did really well and like people know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we say, we're like, yeah, this is, you know, there's a graphic novel. There's a video. Like, we're like, how can you talk about this for so long? I'm like, well, do you know how much of a story this is and like what it has? And it was just funny seeing somebody blown away that they didn't know all that was with Scott Pilgrim, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, the video game, I can understand people not realizing because it was a digital only game released for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 that had a very short lifetime because it was made by Ubisoft. And then once, I want to say it was only on the store for like 2 or 3 years before it got pulled.
Yeah.
So it came out as a promotion for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fun game.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sad that it's gone now forever unless you happen to buy
it. But you're one of the sacred holders of it, though, right?
Oh, of course I am.
Yeah.
I bought that the second it showed up on the store.
That's like, I think I bought it on my Xbox, but then I sold my Xbox. So it's like, now I'm kicking myself, you know, in the butt for it. But it's just like, oh, well, at least I beat it.
Yeah. But, I still have it downloaded on my PS3,
that's like,
which
I know
is
we
connected
talk,
offline and everything.
Exactly. I know we talked about that, and that was like, Brad, you're so lucky. Because, you know, it's not like the Wii store that got, you know, shut down that you knew that was going to happen. They just, like, pulled that plug, you know. Well, you know, like you said, it wasn't as advertised as the movie and, like, you know, the other stuff that Scott Pilgrim had. So, but just kind of wanted to go into, like, some brief history of what is Scott Pilgrim. So as we're talking about this topic and what it is, Scott Pilgrim is based off the graphic novel by Brian Lee O'Malley. And the story is basically, I mean, in a nutshell about, of course, Scott Pilgrim. And he's, you know, kind of like a slacker bassist in this struggling band. And he soon falls in love with this, you know, kind of girl like falls into Toronto. She just moved in, and her name's Ramona Flowers. And yeah, they, you know, he just realized that he has to defeat her seven evil exes to win her heart and basically date her. So it sounds so crazy, but it is such a great concept once you get into the lore and what it is. It's such a cool idea. So that's kind of where we're at with that. So how were you first?
That's a very watered down boilerplate.
I know. But, you know, there's only so many ways you can, like, tell a brief history of, like, Scott Pilgrim, you know. But I wanted to kind of get into, like, how did you get, like, first introduced to Scott Pilgrim?
So for me, when it was the third book that had released, I ended up getting a copy from a friend.
Okay.
So he gave it to me as a gift, and he just gave me the third book. And I was like, okay, I might as well just read this one since I have it. And I liked it. And I was like, okay, I should probably actually go back and read the first and second. And then the fourth book came out. The fifth book came out. And then the movie was announced by Edgar Wright, the guy that did Shaun of the Dead.
Hell yeah.
And Hot Fuzz. And I was like, okay, I can get 100% behind this movie. I love this director. I already love the source material this is coming from. This is going to be amazing. And saw the movie, absolutely loved it, played the game, finally read the sixth book as it released. Because the sixth book in Scott Pilgrim, you know, that the Scott Pilgrim versus the World movie kind of covers wasn't released until after the movie came out.
Oh, all right.
So the ending to the book is actually completely different than the movie, because while Brian was a part of writing the script for the movie, he wanted it to be separate enough from the book that people that were reading the book could still enjoy it and not feel like they had already seen how it's going to end.
Okay.
And then in he followed the same kind of thing with the when he was helping Edgar write the script for adapting it into a movie, where they got a lot of the plot points down. Like, you have all the same characters in the graphic novel as you have in the movie, but the movie kind of streamlines a lot of plots. Mm-hmm. So, and a couple of the characters are slightly different. So, like, in the movie, they kind of allude to the relationship that Kim Pine, the drummer, has with Scott at some point in time. In the graphic novels, you actually see how that went through, and it kind of even goes a little bit more in depth for how it you know, affects them as they are in a band together, having that previous relationship, and why he hates him so much and everything like that. And you kind of, in the movie, they kind of make Scott just be this kind of nerdy kid that really isn't very bright and kind of falls in love with this girl. And you kind of see that she has a past with all these people. And it's not as expressive in the movie as it is in the graphic novel, because you've read a couple of the graphic novels. Each of the evil exes represents a, you know, misdeed of relationships that she has been involved in with each of these people. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like the literally fighting the baggage, so to speak, of the person that you're about to become in a relationship
She's
with.
She's got some battle scars, dude.
Yes. So the graphic novel kind of goes a lot more in depth of, like, what each one of her exes represents as a phase of her life.
You know, I never really thought about, I mean, it's all right there. Like you said, it's not like that hard to understand. That's what, you know, Brian was like trying to put out into his work. But yeah, I never really thought of that. It makes a lot of sense.
It's a lot more evident when you read the graphic novels than when you actually watch the movie. Because if you read the graphic novels, and this is what made me pull into the movie even more, is I already had the backstory of all of these evil exes, and when they kind of changed them up a little bit, I was like, okay, I like these subtle changes and everything like that. I think Matthew Patel is the only one that's pretty much a one-to-one copy transfer from the graphic novel to the movie in terms of everything, and that's the one where they actually even used some of the kind of pages from the graphic novel to kind of tell the story in that black and white mm-hmm. kind of hand-drawn animation that they used to tell how he punched a hole through the moon. Or no,
that was Todd, yeah.
That was Todd.
But no, like, yeah, they. I know when they ever she talks about her backstory, because, they like basically go to the graphic novel, you know? So.
Yeah, he was one of the ones that they told through going back to the graphic novel. I forgot. Todd was the other one that they did that with.
Matthew fought like the football players, the jocks or whatever.
And he had the emo powers.
Yeah.
But
Pirates are in this year.
But yeah, it's just when I started reading it, it just got me entwined in just reading that one book. Even though it was in the middle of the story, it just got me enveloped in the entire world.
Yeah. No, it's a really cool concept of like just, you know, it's not like Dragon Ball Z. It's not like, you know, all stuff that, you know, even like Avengers and all that. It's a really cool like slice of life, even though it is, you know, super crazy and like has a lot of, you know, imagination to it. But it's, you know, it obviously probably hit us since we're about the same age, like at that probably right time. We're like, I went through that. You know, I like girls. I like dork stuff. You know, it's like it just like obviously hit all those check boxes for probably so many people. And, you know, no one did it the way like kind of like how he wrote it. And it was like really cool to see that. And that it got obviously, you know, I found it through the movie first, you know, just like how most people. I was like, it's like one of those things where you realize it had more of a backstory than it did. And like when the movie came out, I was like, oh, this looks like pretty cool. Like the trailers are really good. But once I knew it was like a graphic novel and, you know, it was going to be more than just a movie, I was like, this is badass, you know? And yeah, it's just, like I said, just definitely hit me at the right time, you know? And
oh, yeah.
What's crazy about it is Scott Pilgrim is almost a decade old, the movie at least. So,
yeah, the movie came out in 2010. I want to say the graphic novel started in 2004.
Yeah.
Ish.
It's in, you know, the 2000 range. Yeah. But, you know, but that's what, when I was like researching some stuff, it's just crazy to think that movie's a decade old. And I'm like, man, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. It was 2004 because it was basically a book every single year and it was 6 volumes.
Have you ever heard any like interviews with Brian Lee?
I have.
Yeah. I think it's cool because
he's a very relaxed person when being interviewed.
That's what I was going to say is like the, you know, movie, just the content of Scott Pilgrim is so crazy and so like hype. It's just like, you know, it's just like pushed into your eyes basically with all the visuals and all the references and all that stuff. And then you listen to him, you know, and like he's on all these shows and podcasts and stuff. And they're like, so like, how would you like do all this? And he's just like, you know, I draw and, you know, I like girls at sometimes. And, you know, I just draw a lot and write, you know, he's like so chill. And it's like, but it kind of like makes more sense to that he probably has so much in his head that he put it onto pen and paper and made, you know, such great work. So.
Well, right now he's currently writing another comic called Snot Girl.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Actually continually having issues come out. And then he's working on another one that I can't remember the name of right now that he announced at San Diego Comic-Con like 2 or 3 years ago. Something World. I can't remember what it's actually called, though, right now.
The World versus Scott Pilgrim.
No, it's non-Scott Pilgrim.
I know. I just, like, I always want more Scott Pilgrim, so I'm like, so. He had that one, I didn't read it, but he had another graphic novel called Seconds.
Oh, and, that one's a really good one.
Good.
He also had Lost at Sea.
Okay, yeah. I never read any of his other stuff, but obviously, just like in Scott Pilgrim, I definitely need to do that. I just need to get off my ass and just start reading of his other stuff, so. But, yeah, it's interesting hearing him talk about Scott Pilgrim with other people, even at like more or less these interviews I was listening to, and I'm sure you probably heard as well. It's like you're listening to him at the time of like when this came out or maybe a year after or something. But yeah, he's just a very chill dude, you know,
oh,
kind of
yeah.
likes to keep under the radar, but he knows so much. It's you know, it's pretty cool. So
yeah,
what's like with the graphic novel and stuff, like what was like your favorite volume that like maybe wasn't really like talked about? Or
my favorite volume is actually volume 4, which is one on Roxy.
Okay.
So where that one in the actual graphic novel, they really didn't touch on any part of what actually happens in the graphic novel versus in the movie. Because in the movie, you're introduced to Roxy by going, oh, yeah, she's a ninja, and she kind of goes to attack Scott before he even meets Todd, I believe.
Yeah, it's she pops up once in a while, yeah, you know.
And after that, she kind of disappears, and then she shows up later at the club, and then Scott has to fight her, and then that entire thing's over. And in the graphic novel, she appears in the same way, where she kind of just appears and then Scott kind of just punches her out of the air. Like, the whole her flipping in the air was actually pretty much a one-for-one copy from the graphic novel.
That's cool.
And going, we'll meet again, you know, and then having the whole conversation.
Obviously.
And it ends up that at one point, Ramona leaves Scott to be with Roxy again momentarily in a lapse of judgment. And, you know, like, after they fight, like, she goes to Roxy's house and everything like that and stays the night there and everything. Mm-hmm. And then Scott finds out. And at the same time that's going on, Knives has told her father about Scott and how he broke her heart. So we have Knives' father, who is a trained assassin, trying to kill Scott during the entire time.
Which is never brought up, obviously, into the movie.
Like I said, the entire book is basically not in the movie at all. And it's just all these plot lines that are so great.
Yeah, that's cool.
Every time there's like that ninja swoosh going past Scott, there's that moment of, oh, crap, is it Knife Chow's father or is it Roxy?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's this whole thing of like where Scott has never fought his own battle before. He's always had somebody else kind of deal with the consequences of his actions and stuff like that. And he's going through that with the whole Knives Chow situation. And he's going through that with having Ramona like not by his side right now, as he has to fight Roxy for Ramona pretty much again.
Yeah.
And he at one point is being chased down by Knives' father. And he sees Scott with, or he sees Ramona with Roxy, and pretty much ends up getting Roxy and Knives' father to fight each other. And then it's the moment where he has to, like, take responsibility in his own hands and go, no, I understand what I did to your daughter. This has to stop. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. And, but I had to fight this battle with her myself and all this. And so in the graphic novel, like, that's one of the pieces of just being able to see how they had to combat their past and everything like that. And they're both horrible people that have come together in light of this story. And in the graphic novel, this is a lot more evident by, like, these kind of interactions happening. And they had to get past that and kind of grow from them. And you kind of see that Ramona had these experiences with these different people, and she didn't grow from them. She kind of just left them in her past, and now Scott's having to fight them for her.
Yeah.
And that ends up being a plot line later in the graphic novels of how she needs to actually take control of her life for herself instead of continually letting to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just more of those things that the movie is amazing. I absolutely love it. But at the same time, it skips out on so much from the graphic novels that anybody that can go, I love the movie, I just want to push the graphic novels at them and go, you don't even know the start of it yet. This is, you just pretty much looked at the surface of the ocean that is the storyline behind these characters.
Well, and that's like what's cool about it. And, you know, I listened to that interview you did with Mike from Comic Book Men and stuff. That was really cool. And it is that thing of, you know, when you were asking him about, you know, you're the MCU and stuff like that, taking it in their own way, all these storylines that have, you know, comic books and, you know, people being like, oh, it's not like the comic, it's not like this. It's not,
yeah.
You know, and there is that, and, you know, they're obviously right in some aspects of it, but, you know, Edgar Wright took a awesome, you know, vision of this, you know, we're going from Marvel and like DC stuff to, you know, Brian Lee O'Malley, who, you know, basically can probably ask anybody on the street and they wouldn't know what the hell you're talking about, you know?
Right.
But it's like he took his idea and, yeah, the graphic novels have more detail and more, which they always do with the books and comics and all that stuff.
I mean,
but
to pack all that into a 2-hour movie would be impossible.
Yeah, you can't. And it's okay to do it, but it's okay to take the source material, make it your own, make it your own way, but make it right. And that's why, you know, we're here today, because, again, we love the movie because it is awesome and the graphic novel's awesome as well. So it's like, you can just ingest more stuff, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it's like, even if you read all six and you, you know, loved it at the best level, you can still go see the movie. And yeah, you're going to know how the ending is, but
yeah,
you're going to get a couple things out of it differently and see it differently. And you can go, or you can be on the opposite spectrum where you can watch the movie, go and buy the six, you know, graphic novels, get more out of it and be like, I'm just still in the Scott Pilgrim world and just know it at a different level. And it's like, that's, I think that's how they, like, directors and stuff do it right, you know? Because mm-hmm. if you're doing it page by page, even if you did, like, even if Scott Pilgrim did do it, it probably would have been pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah,
but, you know,
it would have had to be three movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the same time,
but do you
as
want
much
that?
As I love it, I don't want three movies.
Exactly.
I want it all into one combined movie that I can just sit down and watch with somebody, and 2 hours later, we can be talking about it.
Scott Pilgrim is a good example of that, of it's not an Avengers kind of initiative where you have to, you know, it's not 2 hours, it's not 3 hours, it's a very short movie in today's standards.
Yeah.
And it's like the easiest way to get your, like, Scott Pilgrim fix, you know what I mean? And with the music and the you know, just acting and what they did put into it from the graphic novel and just what they just put into it, again, you don't even have to read it to really appreciate it. It's such a good movie. I think we're kind of like segueing into like kind of the movie stuff since,
yeah. Well, I don't know if you ever saw the, interview that, Brian Lee O'Malley did at one point when I think the movie had already been out for like a year and he was doing the, tour for like the Blu-ray release. And somebody asked if he was disappointed in the movie because it was nothing like the graphic novels. And his response was, you realize I wrote the movie, too. How would I be disappointed?
Yeah, yeah. That means I'm disappointed myself, yeah. You know?
And then they asked, like, would you do it if you had a chance to go back and, like, spend more time with the script, would you do it differently? And he said no, because he doesn't want to just redo what he's done before.
Yeah.
And even if he got the money or the opportunity to do something else with Scott Pilgrim, or to do the Scott Pilgrim movie again, he said he would actually do it again completely different from the graphic novels and the previous movie, because he doesn't want to just copy from one medium to another. He wants to be able to use the differences of, like, the medium to tell the story. And I think that's why Edgar Wright actually jumped on ship for doing this movie, because that's 100% his belief. Is use the medium to its best potential. And that's why he's one of the most, you know, one of those directors that is so loved by fans.
Yeah. And it's like he's on such a different scale, too, where it's, you know, he just doesn't take on any project. He looks at a project, and again, if he can put it to what he can see it to be, he'll do it. And that's like what's, you know, what's great, because it's like, yeah, we don't get one every year. We don't get one. You know, it's like he doesn't churn out shit like most other directors and some other people, but it's quantity over quality over quantity. You know, it's like, and yeah, I you know, like, what was the last thing he did, you know?
Baby Driver in 2015.
So, yeah, that's a couple years.
Or not 2015, 2017. 2017.
Yeah. But still, you know, it's like he's not coming out with something so fast. You know, he's kind of like, I guess I would put him on the kind of scale of like Jordan Peele almost. Even though Jordan, you know, Edgar Wright's been doing it longer, you know, they have a vision. They only do what they want and they produce right. good shit. And it's like, that's great. I want that. I don't care if it makes bajillion dollars, but you're going to get my money. And that's all that I feel that matters, you know? So, yeah. And that's how I felt with Scott Pilgrim, because I was like, you know, this is in a time where it wasn't as in your face as when the next movie's coming out. Like, you know, you didn't really have to like dig for obviously what's new in the box office, but mm-hmm. I had no idea what Scott Pilgrim was. And when I saw this movie launching, you know, I maybe saw some commercials about it, you know, and I just kind of like threw some, you know, it was like a gamble. I'm like, this, I see people fighting and some sparks and some, you know, special effects. I'm like, let's see what this is about. I really had no idea what I was walking into and, you know, ended up falling in love with it. I saw it in the theater 3 times and like, I don't even
That's more than me.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess collectively since it released, I've probably seen it in those like throwback movie nights.
Well, you
and
just
stuff.
Saw it recently.
I did.
So,
I just saw it in the theaters at the.
And I, you know, once I knew you were going to see it, I'm like, fuck, that'd be fun, you know?
Oh, yeah. So, it was great.
Yeah. And like, it's just one of those rare occasions where you see a movie like that. And yeah, it's always like a fun ride. That's how I feel about Scott Pilgrim, the movie. And, you know, it's just. Like I said, the music, you know, they have such a good, you know, they have a lot of their own soundtrack, you know, with like the Sex Bombs and like all that stuff in there. And then they have like some good, you know, just actual music, you know, from other stuff and all that. And it's just like, it's just such a awesome ride to like just sit back and watch. And like you said, I'm glad it's the length that is, because if it was like a Shawshank or something like that, where you really had to like, or like a Lord of the Rings type, you know?
It would be a chore to watch
it. We probably wouldn't be talking right now. It'd just be like, all right, it's just a long movie. But it's every time I watch it, I sit down and like after they jam out and, you know, the opening credits and all that stuff, the movie's over. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, it just always flies by because it's so good and like the pacing's so well, you know? We were just talking about with like Captain Marvel, like that's a more recent movie we're talking about now. And the pacing was a little kind of sketchy, but and that sucks when a movie has good content and like
it's
there's
just
some
not paced
slogs.
Properly.
Yeah, you know, and that's like with this, it's yeah, just so cool. But I kind of wanted to bring up too, because it's interesting with all the MCU stuff that so many people from this fucking movie have gone on to do greater and better things. You know, Michael Cera is like the guy that was like, you know, kind of putting this on the map. You know, he was in Superbad. It's just like
For the U.S.
Exactly.
Because
that's like
everybody
the way I looked
else
at it.
That was pretty much in this movie was, well, they tried to find actors that were non-prominent actors. Mm-hmm. And Michael Cera was the only person that was like a prominent actor at the time.
At the time, yeah.
And they grabbed him, and the only reason they grabbed him was because Edgar Wright pretty much had it in, like, contract of, this is the one person that I feel can play this part
and
accurately.
That's my only thing about, not my only thing, but it's just, like, anytime I talk to, like, some people that I know that are all into nerd stuff, like, all, it's like, basically, you're gonna fucking love Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah.
They're not gonna read the book, because I know they're lazy and they're not gonna read it. And it's like, so I'm like, there's this movie. It's like, one movie. I can make you watch, and not make you, but I can persuade you to watch Game of Thrones, Star Trek, Star Wars, all this stuff that, you know, takes more time. And I'm like, just watch this one movie. And people are like, Michael Cera's in it? Really? And I'm like, you know,
but it's top Michael Cera.
Exactly. It's not like if he did it now, it would be a totally different story. But
I mean, I would love to see Michael Cera redo it now.
It'd be interesting. Definitely interesting. But yeah, I'm like, come on. It's not, take the name out. It's not like he wrote it. It's not, again, like all the stuff we just talked about. Mm-hmm. He just fits that build. He's a skinny, nerdy, weird, awkward dork, you know?
And he plays the role perfectly.
Perfect. I wouldn't want anyone else. It's like if, you know, Chris Pratt was in that, wouldn't work. You know, it's like if even Tom Holland, you know, it's like, I'm trying to think of even people now. It's like, there's no one I can think of that would really, at that time too, it's all place and time for that as well, that, you know, can make Scott Pilgrim be Scott, like a live action version of that. And yeah, I just always hate that when I'm like, you would love everything around this movie, yeah, but just because Michael Cera's in it, you're like, oh, it's fucking dumb. I'm like,
oh. Yeah.
And disappointing.
I love when Edgar Wright is talking about how he cast this movie and everything like that, because one of his goals was to not cast anybody from the UK, because he was just known as the UK director that always grabbed UK kind of actors and everything.
Yeah. Like Shaun of the Dead, it's like, and even Hot Fuzz.
Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, it's and like, At World's End.
It's not hard to like keep up with, but it's a different type of tempo, you know? Yeah. So
he wanted this to be more American of a movie. Like, this was his first foray into doing something more American.
I didn't even think of that.
And
that's a good point.
He actually realized he failed in that goal with Matthew Patel's actor, because he's originally from the UK, and he didn't find that out until after.
I thought he was like Egyptian or something. Maybe it's all the makeup and stuff, but
He is, but okay. He lived in the UK. Like, yeah, he was born in the UK and everything.
Obviously closer,
and
you know.
And and then he moved to the US, and then that's where he got cast and everything. And then it was after he got cast that Edgar Wright found out that he was from the UK, and he was like, I had one goal with this movie.
Hey,
you ruined it.
That's still like, even that character too. He
perfectly cast.
Yeah, and like again, he doesn't have any accent. He has like a really good voice, you know.
Yeah.
So that's funny.
Yeah,
there is no British people in it. That's like, no. It's funny. I can't even think of anybody.
He, Edgar Wright set out to make sure that he didn't get anybody from the UK in this movie.
Well, that's really smart for him, because it probably, not saying it wouldn't work, but it's just like, you know, even with like the cat. Katanatic twins or whatever. I'm probably saying that all wrong, but you know, they didn't even like say anything, and they were, you know, Asian, and well, I guess Knives Asian obviously too, but you know, it's like they probably didn't, I don't even know if they speak English or something like that.
The whole movie takes place in Canada.
True, Toronto,
and then the only people that are not from Canada are all of Ramona's evil exes, which are from across the United States.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, what I'm kind of backtracking a little bit, but is with the MCU stuff and all the actors and like what we were talking about, so many people have gone on to this. And since we're, you know, doing this recording at this time now, you know, Captain Marvel just came out, and Brie Larson is Captain Marvel now.
And she played Envy Adams
in
the movie.
Chris Evans, you know, he's Captain America.
Yep.
And and this is a little sidebar here. And Captain Marvel, remember when they were dissecting one of the Skrull guys that I think it's the guy that Samuel Jackson was in the car with?
Yeah.
That doctor was that dude in Scott Pilgrim that knew about Ramona Flowers when Scott was asking. I was like, with nobody that knew my excitement. Like, I wish you were next to me. You know,
yeah,
I'm like,
he was the information guy from the party.
Exactly.
Where
super small part, but again, it's like,
well, that guy's in like a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
I love him as an actor.
It's just like so funny though, because you know that I saw it the other day, so I'm, you know, kind of thinking back in my head, like, I'm going to talk with Brad about Scott Pilgrim, and you know, we obviously knew Brie Larson and all this stuff, and I'm like, there's another Scott Pilgrim character, like a very minute, like little part, but I love that part in the movie too, because he pulls out the sketch and that's what he shows him, and it's like this stupid doodle of like, no one could actually say like what a person looks like. And he's like, oh yeah, Ramona Flowers, she's like from New York. It's such a funny part of that movie.
Well, in the graphic novel, he even has a little bit more of a prominence of being just the information guy for just all kinds of random stuff. And in the graphic novel, you actually read this part. Instead of doing a drawing, he actually does like an M logo over his head and just like with hair like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah, Ramona Flowers.
I know. And that's like what's cool when they translate it into like the movie. Like, just so funny. Like, the humor in Scott Pilgrim is some of my favorite stuff, because I guess more or less, and I don't know if you feel the same way, is like the way that movie just encapsulates everything that I like about movies. It has feelings, it has action, it has, you know, good comedy and, you know, it just kind of has everything in it, you know? And that's why I like that kind of concept where I can get, you know, it's like you can get serious with it. There's a lot of serious stuff and a lot of serious, like, kind of like you're thinking about, you're like, yeah, you know, they're, you know, think about life. And then you're like, oh, and then there's all this action. And even to this day, like the special effects in that, I think are still great.
Amazing looking.
Like making, you know.
That movie needs to come out in 4K.
Exactly. Yeah, you did bring that up. And just the scene where Ramona versus Roxy, that's one of my favorite fight scenes in cinema. It's just so freaking good and looks fantastic. And it's like, it's just crazy, you know, and it's cool. Like people overlook that. I'm like, how would you not want to try to see this movie, you know?
Which that fight scene that happens in the movie between Ramona and Roxy is taken from the graphic novel as a fight scene between Ramona and Envy Adams.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, when I was kind of researching some stuff about this, like I heard Envy obviously has more of a obviously point into the graphic novel. Like she has like a lot more like just kind of stake into it, you know, not just like the Todd thing. So
yeah. So in the graphic novel, she's actually prominently featured in the 3rd, 4th, and then 6th graphic novels. So
I like how I have a notebook here and you don't.
I just have it all.
I'm so fucking jealous. I'm just like, you just know this shit. This is why I'm glad I had you on here. So
when it comes to stupid random nerd knowledge, I got this. You know, like I even know the person that did the coloring for the color edition was Nathan Fairbairn, who I follow on Instagram because he just posts some amazing artwork and everything like that. And I'm waiting for him to show up to a convention nearby, and I'm going to pick up every hardcover copy of Scott Pilgrim I can find and just be like, sign all of these. $25, done.
Yeah,
Just sign all of them, please.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome. So, like, what are your favorite parts about, like, the movie? Like, since you obviously have read them all, and when you saw this movie come out, like, what kind of, like, blew your mind for seeing the movie, you know?
So, the parts of the movie that I actually liked more than the graphic novel, having read the graphic novel.
Yeah.
The Battle of the Bands with the twins. I thought that was a much better way of doing that scene than how they did it in the graphic novel. And
isn't that like one whole book about them fighting, like the Sex of Vines fighting the twins and stuff like that?
In the actual graphic novel, the Sex Bob Moms do not actually go up against the twins in any kind of Battle of the Band situation or anything.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it's not a part of the graphic novel at all. And in the graphic novel, Scott actually fights a robot that the twins built.
Okay.
So completely different. And
but still makes sense.
Yeah. And yeah, it for the story of the graphic novel, it has a lot more impact that way. So I'm not going to downplay that, you know, it shouldn't have been done that way because absolutely love how that went down in the graphic novel.
Yeah.
But for the movie, just that scene of having, you know, Scott kind of doubting what's going on with Ramona and Gideon kind of being with each other again. And then he's now fighting a band that Gideon booked specifically to fight him. And it's all coming together of him realizing that Gideon's been putting together a lot of the stuff that's happening to him.
Yeah.
And for him to kind of turn around and have that moment with his band and kind of going, I have people behind me that will help me, but I still have to do this myself. And that kind of push into what leads into the final battle makes it a lot more it makes a lot more sense why things came together the way they did at the end of the movie versus the end of the book when it kind of goes about pushing it another way. If they kind of tried to do it the way the book did, they would have had to start doing stuff like that all the way at the beginning of the movie in order to be able to get the same sense from the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so also watching a giant ape thing fight two electronic dragons.
Yeah.
You can't
with this threshold. I love that song.
Oh yeah.
It's such a good one. You know?
Yeah. The music, the cinematography, everything about that scene, I just love. And they did it wonderfully for the story to kind of push it forward. And the next scene that I love, absolutely, I could watch over and over is right before you're introduced to Matthew Patel, with the whole getting to the bar with the Battle of the Bands with Crash and the Boys.
Yeah.
And where they kind of go up and you have Wells kind of, you know, haggling them a little bit of you know.
Andrew Kendricks and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
is that boy a drummer? Yeah. You know, is that girl a boy? What is he? I forgot.
Is that girl a boy too?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. It's so great.
You know, this song is dedicated to the guy in the back that won't shut the hell up. I love this song.
I am sad.
Yeah.
I am so, so sad.
Yeah. But Wallace Wells is easily one of the best parts of the book and of the actual movie. I absolutely love him with a passion. And it just because every single line he has is great.
Hell yeah. He's on point every single point. Anytime you talk, again, from the movie perspective, it's just like, he's Macaulay Culkin, Macaulay Culkin's brother. I can't remember his actual name, but he's a Culkin. So, yeah. I didn't know even Macaulay Culkin had siblings when I went and saw that movie. That was when, like, you know, you're obviously get into the point of your life when you're researching shit, and I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? And like, yeah, Evil X. Fight, you know, as like the story goes on, like,
what do I do?
Yeah,
fight.
Guess who's drunk?
Yeah, you know?
I love his lines are probably my definitely favorite, and there's so many good lines in it. But yeah, he is a character that's just there on the offsides. You know, he's kind of like, obviously, Scott's like cheerleader, I would say.
Yeah,
in a weird way.
It's his roommate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that everything in their apartment belongs to him, except there's a poster that belongs to Scott and I think his jacket. And that's about it. Because even like Scott's clothes are owned by Wallace.
Yeah. You know, it's a funny reference that's like really dates the time of the movie is when he's on the computer and he's like reading all the emails for like the evil exes and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he's like trying to order on a computer off Amazon. He's like,
yes.
What's Amazon.ca? Like, how do you get to that? And he's like,
what's the URL for Amazon.ca? Amazon.ca. Oh, thanks.
It's so fucking funny. It even takes us because that's in Canada. So, like, that is right. But for us, if you put that in, like, your shit's not going to get delivered to your doorstep if you do that.
The timing of comedy in this movie is just perfect.
Oh, it's so good.
Because
P-Meter, Zelda. I mean, it's just like there's so many references and funny stuff that it's just integrated into the movie that if you're a fucking nerd, you're
going to have a blast with this movie.
Like
it's what it comes down to.
Exactly. That's why it goes back with the Michael Cera stuff. It's like, if you like all this shit and you go in and it's like you don't like this stuff, you know what I mean? Like if you can't get past this actor and all the stuff that's in this movie, like I don't know what you're doing with your life. So
I think the worst part is I don't even see Michael Cera when watching this movie.
Neither do I. Yeah.
He isn't as the same as he is in Superbad or in, I'm trying to remember what the other one he did.
Juno.
Where he had like, well, he was in Juno. Yeah. I forgot about that one. And then the other big one that everybody kind of always references
he
for
did
him
that playlist one.
Is where he has like the evil side of him and kind of.
Oh,
over...
yeah. I know what you're.
I can't remember the name of that movie.
That movie was fucking stupid where he had a mustache.
Yeah.
That's when like people started hating him, I think.
Yeah.
Because he had like the nice, like the, basically he was Scott Pilgrim in that. And then he had Nega Scott. Mm. And like that was like what that movie was about.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's too bad, but, you know, it's just whatever because I can watch Superbad, and I'm not thinking about Scott Pilgrim when I watch Superbad. It's just that's that movie, and I wouldn't want anyone else but him to be that. I would have gave him an Oscar. He did a fucking awesome job.
Oh, yeah.
You know, portraying that character.
The fact that Edgar Wright has not gotten a Oscar for directing that movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
for anything,
that hurts
you know,
me.
Like music, you know, special effects, even at that time, you know, I think at that time, again, like I said, it still holds up. Like, none of the stuff looks shitty.
Like, yeah, it's still.
And it's a lot of special effects and like CGI, not a lot of CGI, but just like anytime they do something.
They really didn't use CGI in like the same aspect CGI is used today.
For sure. Yeah. It's like, it's anytime any, like, even the aspect of like them turning into coins at the end of, you know, it's like, that's so cool. And I've never seen that. And it's such a nerd concept that I've, you can't put in anywhere else, you know? And like the whole game aspect, you know, like I got a life, you know, I got to redo a level, like all that stuff. Like you think about it and it's just like, that's, it's so much to what, if you grew up with this kind of stuff, like video games and, you know, all this stuff and all that, but this movie just puts it in a capsule in such a good way.
Yeah.
And it's just so badass.
It makes, it's the best video game adaptation of a movie.
And it's not even,
and it's not even based on a video game.
It became a video game after, you know what I mean? And like, again, the video game is actually probably the weakest part, I would say. It's not terrible and not bad, it's, but it just was.
Side-scroller beat-em-up.
Yeah, exactly. And it, like,
know, it's fun, but it's fun in the same way as side-scroller beat-em-up is.
And we'll transition into the video game because I wanted to, we could talk about the movie obviously for 70 hours, like you said.
Yeah. And how long is this podcast? We got about 17 more hours to go, right?
Yeah. We'll be, we got, this is going to be a long one. It's probably going to break some records. So high score on podcast hours. But I just kind of wanted to skim across the game a little bit because the game is. It's important because it's a part of this whole thing with the graphic novel, the movie, and it became a game. And yeah, it is just a side scroll beat 'em up, but it kind of connects the dots to the movie, to the graphic novel. So if you read the graphic novel and played the game, you'd be happy because it's the same art style. It has like everyone looks the way it does in the graphic novel, more or less. You know, just obviously in the video game standard.
Just in like an 8-bit kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And again, it's all retro style, you know, like they didn't try to make it 3D, like, you know, something crazy that it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And people that watched the movie were like, oh, I can go home and download, you know, the Scott Pilgrim game, you know, because it wasn't $50. It wasn't $60. It was a downloadable
thing. I think
it
launched at like $15.
Exactly. So it was easy to get. And yeah, it's just like a 4-player beat 'em up, and you know you're getting in that Scott Pilgrim feel that it gave you, where you're like, oh, I want to play some retro shit. I want to, you know, they only talk about Final Fantasy, Zelda, you know, like Tetris, old stuff. So the game brought you back into that retro style. And if you only seen the movie, you're playing actually like the graphic novel because you're not getting the context of it, like reading it, but you're seeing, you're like, why does, because all the, you know, evil exes look like they do in the graphic novel. So you're like, and they're as animated that way too. So they have the special powers and like all the stuff. You're like, I mean, from a game, you're like, oh, of course they can do all this stuff. But you're like, why is Gideon, you know, this giant demon god thing, you know, like, it's like, that's not how it played out. And like, what are these levels? Like, what are these bad guys? What
and that's even why separate do all the from character- how it happens in the graphics novel, too.
Exactly. But it's like I say, it's like connecting the dots in a more different way. And it's like, kind of like, I guess let's bring this to a Zelda reference. It's like the Triforce. You got the graphic novel, you know, the movie, the video game. And you put it all together and fuck, can we just not talk about how the movie had such a great soundtrack? Then you go to the video game who had Anna Monoguchi kill the fucking score and all their own stuff. You know, they're like in kind of like a chiptune type of band, but man, that doesn't get boring.
That soundtrack is definitely
so great.
Oh, I love it.
It's better than the movies, I would say. But, you know, it's like it couldn't be in the movie.
Right.
So it's.
I think one of the songs is actually in the movie from the game.
But, you know, like the whole thing couldn't be in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
If they had the chiptune soundtrack in the entire movie, people would be gouging their ears out.
Like,
by...
if Anna Monoguchi did, like, the score behind Scott Pilgrim, the movie, it would be weird.
Yeah.
But because we had an outlet as the game and they made the whole score for that and, like, all the sounds and all that. we are just fucking so spoiled as fanboys, you know? But go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The soundtrack for the actual movie is good, too, because they had songs used in it as
Like I said, Threshold, you know, even the beginning, you know, with the sex. Every time the saxophone plays, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Even when they're like, come on, come on. I mean, like, that's like 2 minutes. Not 2 minutes, but it's like 2 seconds, basically. But
and I still think Brie Larson singing Black Sheep by Metric is one of my favorite kind of songs from that.
So, and I like both versions. Like, I thought that was, like, before, when I first heard it, I thought that was just for the movie. And then, like, no, that's actually by the band Metric.
Yeah.
Then I listened to Metric's version, and I'm like, you know, it's different, but it's still great.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Brie Larson.
I still like Brie Larson's version.
Hers is way better, yeah. And they cut it off in the movie, too. You know, that song's actually a lot longer. And, like, they made, like, kind of like a video about that. Like, not like a music video when, like, they were promoting it. And it's, like, the whole song of Black Sheep sung by Brie Larson. And just, like, obviously Scott Pilgrim, you know, flashes and stuff through it. And that almost is probably why I don't like them. No, it's not why I don't like the movie, but I hate when that song gets cut off in that part, you know?
See, I'm just glad the song made it in because was the best way to kind of introduce Envy Adams to as like Ramona, and then, you know, Ramona just go, see the drummer there?
The bassist.
The bassist.
Yeah, and, she's... Yeah, that's
right, because the drummer is the girl with the robot arm.
Yeah, and that's like only in the graphic novel.
Yeah,
you know, because that's where, because Todd, you know, smacks the highlight, punches the highlight out of her hair. But in the graphic novel, it's the drummer that punches her.
Yeah,
he's like a robot, I guess.
Yeah, a robot that's actually cheating with Tom on Envy.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I got to get caught up on this.
Oh, you got to read the graphic novel. It's amazing.
No, I'm going to. But this is one thing I want to bring up before we kind of wrap up here. But what do you feel like should be kind of brought up for Scott Pilgrim? Do you think it kind of should be laid to rest? Think there should be some resurgence of it with, like, you know, Netflix and all that stuff now?
I will always happily accept more Scott Pilgrim in my life. And the interesting thing is, I actually pulled it up a little bit ago. The story that Brian Lee O'Malley is working on right now is called Worst World.
Oh, okay. All right.
And
that's his, like, newest thing?
That's the one that he's working on now. They announced, like, 2 years ago that he was working on. And he's working on it along with Snot Girl. And in a recent interview where people were asking him, you know, about... like the latest issue of Snot Girl just released like a week and a half ago. So he did an interview with a website regarding that. And they asked him if there was anything in the pipeline for Scott Pilgrim. And he said there is definitely some talks of something else with Scott Pilgrim, but no details are kind of like laid out yet. So we are probably going to get something else, Scott Pilgrim, especially since... Nathan Fairbairn is working on some new colorations for Scott Pilgrim for the soft cover versions of the color version of the graphic novel.
Jeez.
So
that's good news.
Yeah. Hell so yeah. They're actually coming out with 3 books, each of them covering 2 graphic novels in a set for the color editions of Scott Pilgrim released in like the smaller format versus the giant hardcover books.
That's so awesome. I can't wait to see what that's going to be. So
yeah, so they kind of showed off the covers, and I think those are starting to release now if they didn't yet. I already have the hardcover version, so I don't need to buy them again in softcover.
It's not bad. Like, you know, I looked them up online and stuff like that to read, you know, and, you know, I don't mind, but just since I like Scott Pilgrim a lot, like, it's like $30, $40 to get all 6 off Amazon and stuff. That's crazy good deal.
Yeah, it's not that pricey at all to just get those and have them.
And again, 6 volumes, it's like you can crush that really quick. And, I think with the style Scott Pilgrim is, it just... makes so much sense that it should be a smaller kind of mini series of like a Netflix thing or whatever streaming platform it can be. I don't think it'd be hard. And again, it could dive into the story that, you know, you're talking about, like, you know, basically just showing the whole story of the graphic novel in a cartoon, you know? And do you remember, I totally like found this the other day, and I remember when this came out, but when Scott Pilgrim was first announced in the movies and stuff, and they're promoting it.
The Adult Swim cartoon?
Yeah, you knew
exactly. Of course
exactly.
I know the Adult Swim cartoon.
I know, because I was writing down all this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, like, don't you think there should be a cartoon? So I like YouTube some stuff. I'm like, well, let me make sure there isn't something I don't see. And yeah, they had the Kim story.
It was kind of the Kim story, yeah. But it was more with...
It's like 3 minutes. So.
Yeah, but it was kind of to introduce Girl of Unknown Name,
yeah.
Who was cut from the movie. She actually is a girl that Scott left Kim to start dating.
Yeah, that's what's weird, too.
And she re-enters the story in the graphic novels at one point, which causes Ramona to start questioning Scott and everything. And then that's when she goes back to Roxy. And the fourth book, man, it's so great. Yeah. I love it. It's easily my favorite.
But, and like, that's what's funny because it's so cool Adult Swim let that happen and made that and like, you know, promoted that in that way for the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, he even makes that reference in the movie where, you know, Ramona is like asking him about his kind of past because, you know, he's like, how many ex-girl, like, boyfriends, all this stuff. And then she, like, kind of, like, turns it on him, and he's like, she's like, what about Kim? And he's like, I had to beat up a bunch of guys. And, says it in, like, a one line.
I had to beat up, like, 100 guys and fight this giant dude that was 17 feet tall.
Yeah. So, and it's kind of, like, the same thing from that that little short that they made, you know? And it's, like, it's funny because... I remember I watched that way after the fact. You know, I saw the movie probably like twice after that. Then I'm like, why is Adult Swim showing Scott Pilgrim shit? And I'm like, oh, I put all the pieces together. I'm like, that's fucking awesome, you know? And it's like, and it just makes it so, this is what I'll just kind of put together with Scott Pilgrim is it can be everything. It can be a video game. It can be a live action. It can be a cartoon. And it doesn't break the medium, you know? It's like...
Right.
It's so simple in the concept. It's, you know, it can be on all platforms, you know, as long as it's what it's supposed to be about, they can make a TV show about it and be cool, you know? So
yeah, it's definitely one of those stories that can cross mediums and it's not going to go out of touch because of the story that it's actually telling.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to have a story that can stand the testament of time like that because everybody's going to have relationships. Everybody's going to have those certain relationships that they look back on, they learn from. And this movie is about that. It's about having those previous relationships, learning from them, growing from them, and what happens when you don't grow from them and, you know, everything like that. I just love it.
It's fucking awesome. And let's talk 70 more hours about this, but I think we can kind of wrap this up here with Scott Pilgrim. This has been great, Brad. Like you, I this is why I wanted you to have on here because you fucking know your shit, and it's just always great talking to you about anything, you know, we're talking about. So where can people find you at, you know, like
you can catch me and more of my stupid voice and opinions on The Breakfast Table. 8bitwaffles.com is where I post movie reviews, everything like that. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/8bitwaffles. That's pretty much everywhere you can find me right now.
Hell yeah. And again, you can see all these episodes at trainerpodcast.com. It's my website with all my stuff. And this is the Ultimate Nerd Podcast. You know, thanks for listening. And Brad, thanks for being on. And
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I hope to be Ramona's eighth evil ex, you know, so that's my life goal.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead's now going to be Huntress on Birds of Prey, so.
Let's just stop talking. All right, we'll see you next time on Ultimate Nerd Podcast.